Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
This is Pro Football Hall of Famer John Hanna, and you're listening to the official Football Learning Academy podcast on the Sports History Network.
Welcome to the official Football Learning Academy podcast. I'm your host, Ken Crippen, and I'm the founder and lead instructor at the Football Learning Academy, an online school teaching pro football history. To learn more about the Football Learning Academy, go to our website at www.football-learning-academy.com. Not only will you find links to our social media channels and a listing of all podcast episodes, but you'll find other fascinating interviews and classes. And an important note, a portion of all proceeds generated at the Football Learning Academy go to help retired players in need. That website again is www.football-learning-academy.com. If you like what you hear with this or any of our episodes, give us a 5-star rating and review on the podcast platform. It helps us grow our podcast so we can continue to bring you quality content. If you're interested in becoming a sponsor for our show, email us at admin@football-learning-academy.com to talk about the various options available to you. We would love to talk to you about adding you to our team. Now on to our episode. Today's special guest is Hall of Fame linebacker Brian Urlacher, who played with the Chicago Bears from 2000 through 2012. He was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 2018. In this episode, we talk about something that's important to both Brian and to me, and that is helping retired players in need. Brian is on the board of directors for Gridiron Grades Assistance Fund, and we spend time talking about the organization in this interview. We also talked a little Hall of Fame and the current state of the Chicago Bears. For the Pro Football History Nugget of the Week, we talk about the lineage of great linebackers in Chicago Bears history. You're not going to want to miss it. Now let's get to our interview with Hall of Famer Brian Urlacher. I'd like to welcome Hall of Famer Brian Urlacher to the official Football Learning Academy podcast. How are you doing today, Brian?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
So you are on the board of directors of the Gridiron Greats Assistance Fund, an organization that's dedicated to helping retired players who need it the most. And that's something that's very important to us here at the Football Learning Academy. Like I mentioned to you in email that I've been interviewing players for about 30 years now, and a lot of these players are just struggling. You hear these heartbreaking stories. Yeah. And it's something where, you know, how can I not do something about it? And that's why I want to use the FLA to help raise money for those retired players. So let's start off with a little bit of history on Gridiron Greats. When was it formed? Who formed it? And why was it formed?
Coach Dick has started it. I'm not sure what year. It's been a few years now. So when I played, I had no idea it existed. Most of the current players don't know it exists either. That's how little the NFL informs them of this, that what's going on and how little of help that they get from the current NFL situation. But Coach Dick has started it. In my opinion, anything that he's associated with is a great cause in my book. But beyond that, it's these guys have no benefits. They have no insurance. They're struggling mentally. They're struggling financially, health wise. It's tough to go, you know, put their bodies through what they put them through for football and then not get taken care of by the league that they help, you know, set up right now to be successful as it is. The NFL wouldn't be what it is right now without these players who are now struggling because of the situations they put their bodies through. But Coach Dicka, I was inducted into the Hall of Fame for them, the Gridiron Greats Hall of Fame, a few years ago. That's the first time I heard of it, like 5-6 years ago. And I became pretty friendly with most of the people there. It was a great cause, I thought. So I jumped on board. It's an amazing thing they do.
I guess when Coach Dicka comes and asks you to be a part of it, you do whatever he says, right?
You don't think twice. You know, I didn't get to play for Coach Dicka, but he carries a lot of respect in my circles. You know, he's done a lot. People don't really realize how much he's done for charities and stuff like that, because they think he's a hard-nosed dude. He is a hard-nosed dude. but he's got a big heart. You know, he'd give you the shirt off his back. So when he is, like I said, when he's involved in something, you know it's a good cause.
Now, what separates Gridiron Greats from some of the organizations out there that are helping retired players?
This actually goes back to the players. I don't know exactly how much percentage of other organizations go back to their players. This money actually goes back to the players. You know, it's not going somewhere else. It's not going to this, like 40% here. This one goes directly back to the players. This I know. You know, I spoke with Karen about that. She's I'm not sure her position, but she's amazing. She makes things tick over there at Gridiron Greats. And she has a great staff as well, but she's the driving force behind it. But I know that the money goes to the players directly. Every penny they raise goes back to help the retired players.
Now, I know during previous collective bargaining agreement negotiations, several player groups have formed to help those retired players, especially the pre-1993 players. Tell me about some of the challenges that the pre-1993 players faced during that time and what Gridiron Greats did to help them.
So I don't know all the ins and outs of the contracts. I have no idea. Even when I played, I didn't pay attention to it. You know, that's probably a downfall that a lot of players have now as well. We don't pay close enough attention to the details of what the contracts were signing, but I know the insurance wise, it wasn't good for them. I think that was pre-free agency. Was that what that was? Or pre-CBA right. Or something like that. Mm-hmm. So they had very little perks back then and had even less after that when they retired. So it's just, it's a bad deal, you know, and the NFL doesn't lend a finger to help them out. As far as I know, the NFL gives nothing to Gridiron Greats, you know. That's a multi-billion dollar industry, and there's no fund from the NFL that helps these players. So it's got to be done outside that, you know, which is why Coach Nick has started doing this.
Talk to me about some of the challenges that the players are facing today.
The retired players.
Yeah.
Well, like I said, no insurance. So my insurance, I retired in 2012, my insurance expires next year. So I've been out for 13 years and then I'll have to start paying my, which is fine. You know, I'm not complaining, but that's just how that's how bad our PA is, our NFL PA is for our players. We sign these deals thinking that, oh, we're not going to need the insurance after we retire, but you do. You don't realize, you know, you have three kids, you have to pay for insurance. It's $3,500 a month for our family. So you start thinking about that, and they've done some things to kind of shore that up, but it does run out at some point. And most of the time when these guys get older, that's when they have the issues, right? When they're past 45 or 50, when they have no insurance, or when they're paying for their own insurance is usually when the problems come up. But they've, you know, financial issues, obviously. They didn't make the money that the players are making now or that we made when I played. And they're just mental. Now you look at the CTE and the things that they've come to find out really happened to these players. And these guys put their bodies through hell. You know, it was different for them than it was when we played back. Even in my day, they went through a lot more than we did.
Talk to me about some of the events that you have throughout the year to raise money for Gridiron Greats.
Yeah, there's the Gridiron Greats Hall of Fame induction in Chicago. I think it's in June every year. There's the Gridiron Greats party, the Ditka and Jaws cigar party at the Super Bowl. I get to host it, but my name's not on the thing. I don't know. I don't get it. You know, I'm standing in for Coach Ditka, but my name's not. That's okay. I'm happy to
even
be.
A subtitle. They don't have a subtitle.
No, it's just that Ditka and Jaws hosted by Brian Urlacher. It's pretty cool, but I'm very happy to be a part of that. I've done it 2 years now. It's awesome. I'm shocked how many players turn out for this thing. I think in Arizona, we had like 1,200 people. In Vegas last year, it was cold. It was chilly, so, you know, it's outside because it's a cigar party. But a ton of people still came out. So it's amazing for me, the people that come out. I think there's a golf tournament as well the same week as that, and there's another golf tournament throughout the year as well. So they're trying to do things to bring awareness. I think the number one thing to help them is awareness. You know, like I said, I didn't know about this when I played, and I know a lot of guys who play now don't know about it either because the NFL doesn't talk to them about it. Why would they search it out unless they knew about it?
Yeah, now you alluded to it. There's a huge list of retired players that are involved with this organization. I'm guessing that carries a lot of weight when it comes to fundraising. Talk to me a little bit about that, about how having this huge cadre of players is helping you out.
I think it's a big deal. The more bigger name players you can get, I think it's a big deal. You look at sponsors for the Hall of Fame party or the Gridiron Greats party during Super Bowl. We have some great sponsors for that throughout the year. Just like I said, bringing awareness. They don't do a whole lot of events because it takes a lot to put an event on to kind of get these going. I'm not sure the return is worth it sometimes. So they may not do as many as they want to, but the ones they do are awesome. They're fun. Like I said, the awesome current players and former players come to these events. It's just a cool chance to get a chance to meet some people and hang out.
Talk to me about some of the success stories that you've had helping some of these players that need it the most.
Well, I don't know any off the top of my head. I got involved a couple of years ago when Karen asked me to host the Super Bowl party with Jaws because Coach Zicka couldn't make it. I don't the day-to-day and the hands-on, I don't see any of that stuff. I just know that Karen and the people there do a great job. Now I'm sure there's a video or something. If you went on their website, you can find it. But personally, I don't I go on by what Karen tells me. You know, I've seen them. I saw them hand a check at the Super Bowl for, like, I think, $55,000 to Jimbo Covert, maybe a little more, a little less, somewhere in there, for his charity or for his charity, but also to help the same fun thing. But so they do raise money. They do a good job. And like I said, it all goes back to the players.
So for the players that need help, how can they reach out to Gridiron Greats?
GridironGreats.com is the best way to go, I would think, to go on there and get your information. Reach out to somebody who's in the organization and send an email, send a text, call somebody. I would think I know that they don't make it hard. I'll tell you that much. Once you get in contact with them, it is not difficult for them to lend a helping hand.
Now, what can we do now to try to help some of the younger players before, you know, they start having some of these issues? Are there programs that can be put in place or, like you said, awareness? I mean, what else can we do for the younger players just starting?
That's a great question. I have no idea because football is a violent game. You know, the longer you play, the more issues you're going to have. And that's just, you know, my son plays football. I told him, I said, hey, look, I love that you play football. It's a great game. But if you play, you're going to get hurt. That's just the bottom line. No matter what position you play long enough, you're going to get hurt. Just a matter of when and how bad. You know, not everyone has major injuries. That's you know, some of us are fortunate. We get out of it pretty healthy. But there are those who are going to have it. Just you don't know who it's going to be. But take care of your body as best you can, I think. My thing would be set yourself up for after football. You know, I think people don't realize, they think you're going to play football for all these years. You're not. It's such a small part of your life, your professional football career. And I played 13 years. That's a long time. Most of them are even shorter than that. So prepare for life after football. You know, think about your insurance. Think about your family. You're just try and set yourself up for success when you're done. So when you are done, you can enjoy what you've worked for your whole football career.
Let's talk about some of the things that are going on now. What do you think of the new kickoff rules? And do you think it's going to help reduce injuries at all or have more returns? Or is it just they're just keep tweaking it for the sake of tweaking it?
Number one, it's going to look really weird watching that play on TV. I saw some highlights of people doing it. It's going to look weird. Will it prevent injuries? Probably, because there won't be as many full speed collisions, right, with the guys running down the field. I get that. I totally get them trying to make it safe. Don't necessarily agree with it. I don't have to. It doesn't matter what I think. If it makes the game safer, I think that's a good thing. The tackling rule, I don't even know what that tackle looks like. The hip drop tackle, whatever it means. It's hard enough for these guys to play defense as it is. And now you're you know, there's already a small zone you can hit the receivers and running backs in the first place. Now you can't tackle them a certain way. So it's hard enough to play defense. Now they're going to make it even harder for these guys on defense to play to tackle these guys.
Yeah, a couple of Hall of Fame questions for you. So you've got two Bears going in the Hall of Fame this year, McMichael and Devin Hester. And then if you want to count Julius Peppers.
Julius is a Bear. Hell yeah, I played with Pep. He's a Bear.
So talk to me about all three of them. What made them so special?
Pretty amazing. You know, obviously Devin Hester is the best to ever do what he did. You know, the kickoff returns, the punt returns. I think he leads the NFL ever in history for return touchdowns. He changed the game for us when it came to field position. Teams would do some weird stuff when they kicked off, when they tried to prepare for him in the kickoff game. They'd kick it out of bounds. They would kick it short, punt it out of bounds. It was just to see them. And then when they did kick it to him, obviously, they practiced all week. You know, some coaches are like, we're going to kick to him. We're going to cover it, blah, blah, blah. And he runs it back. It's amazing what he did for that part of our field position-wise. Points just set us up great on offense. Julius Peppers, the best athlete ever to play with. Just different guy. 6'7", 290, run as fast as he wanted to, jump as high as he wanted to. Just different. Busted his butt in practice, played great. Great teammate. I really enjoyed those few years I had with Pep there in Chicago on my last couple of years. And we were good when he was there. He made our defense better. But he was a no-brainer first ballot Hall of Famer. And then Michael, I know Steve from early on in my career, I got a chance to meet him. What a character. You know, but when he was him, what a great character. He was fun. We kind of got gypped out of hearing his speech, you know, because he's not going to be able to give it at the Hall of Fame. Right. And that's a speech that everyone's going to want to hear. You know, I'm not sure who's going to give it for him, but We got gypped because he should have been in a long time ago, in my opinion. If you talk to guys on that 85 Bears team, the guys that are in the Hall of Fame already, they say he was the guy. He was the best defensive tackle on that, or defensive lineman on that team. And you got two Hamptons in the Hall of Fame, Dent's in the Hall of Fame, and they'll say he was the best one. So I'm excited for all three of them. Like I said, we kind of got gypped out of hearing McMichael's speech.
Another Hall of Fame question for you. When you were inducted into the Hall of Fame, did it really sink in the lineage of middle linebackers on the Chicago Bears? When you got George, you got Butkus, you got Singletary, you've got you. I mean, one franchise having a string of Hall of Famers at the same position. Did that sink in at all when you got inducted?
It did before I got inducted, honestly. You said Bill George. No one mentions Bill George. You're one of the first people, the media guys every once in a while, but he was the first middle linebacker. Right. You know, then you had Butkus, Singletary, and we've had, you know, even before I got there, people don't know. Barry Minter was a good linebacker as well before I got there. He was the guy who played there before I got there. Not at our level, but a good linebacker. And then we had Roquan for a couple of years there in Chicago as well. You know, they traded him. That was a good trade. Yeah, the Bears fans love defense. I don't know what it is. They're just hard-nosed fans. You know, it's cold weather. They gravitate towards defense, and we've just been fortunate to have some really good defensive players there in Chicago. Wish we scored more points, but we'll take a winning guy on the defensive side of the ball, I guess.
The Bears have two picks in the top 10 in the draft this year, so obviously we know quarterback is something that they need to focus on, but where else do they need the most help?
I'm a big defensive line guy. You know, I being a former middle linebacker, you know, that's where it starts. The pass rush, the three technique defensive ends getting pressure on. If you can get pressure in the NFL with four guys, you're doing a pretty good job. You're going to have a chance to be successful on defense because you can play zone coverage and you can get more eyes on the quarterback, especially with the way they run these days. So they're going to have to get a quarterback. They traded their other guy away. So they're going to have to get a quarterback in there somewhere. But I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see because they do have a lot of firepower when it comes to draft picks. You know, they got some ammo to make some moving around if they want to.
Yeah, and they did well in free agency as far as boosting the offense. I mean, you bring in Keenan Allen, you have DeAndre Swift, you had Gerald Everett coming in. They picked up some O-line help. So
I was shocked that they got DeAndre Swift. Why does Philly let him go? He's awesome. He was awesome in Detroit. He was awesome in Philly. And I'm sure he's going to be awesome in Chicago as well. So I was shocked and very pleased that they got him because I think he's a monster.
Is it because they had Saquon that they figured that we can't have?
Oh, that's right. They signed Saquon. I forgot about that. Yeah, that makes a little sense now, I guess. But, you know, Saquon's a great player as well. But DeAndre Swift, I mean, what a steal for the Bears. You know, for him to be out there and available is a big deal. And then they, you know, still got to pull the trigger and sign him. But I'm a big fan of his.
Back to some Hall of Fame stuff again. I know that you're a big Zach Thomas fan, so I'm guessing you're pretty happy that he finally got in. Talk to me about that.
I was his number one advocate to get him in the Hall of Fame. It shouldn't have taken this long. The guy, when he retired, had the credentials to get in right then. But for some reason, sometimes it takes guys a little bit longer to get in. Don't know why. Don't agree with it, but that's just the way it goes sometimes. And he's one of my great friends, more importantly. Zach went to Texas Tech. I grew up in New Mexico, which is my hometown, 70 miles from Texas Tech, from Lubbock. So I was a fan back then. I was a fan when he was at the Dolphins. I was a fan when he was at the Cowboys. I love the way the guy plays, man. He plays football the right way. He runs to the ball every play. He loves the game. He's having a good time out there. Just love watching him play. But if you put my stats up, Ray Lewis is up, and Zach Thompson's up, don't put our names in there. Pick which ones are in there. Prior him to get in the Hall of Fame. You could pick any one of those three, and they could all be in the Hall of Fame. So I'm glad he got in. He deserves it. What a great guy. I'm so happy. He gave me a call when he got the word, so I was pretty happy to be a guy that he called.
Well, that's good.
Yes.
So who else do you think belongs in the Hall of Fame that isn't in there right now?
I'm going to go with my teammates, obviously. Olin Krutz. Mm-hmm. Olin's been a finalist a couple times. You know, Kevin Mawai got in, I think, 4 or 5 years ago, deservingly, 100%. So in my opinion, Olin is just as good as Kevin, if not better. I played with him my whole career. Unbelievable. I played against the best every day. That's why I was able to do what I did, because of Olin and preparing me to play. Charles Tillman. There's another guy that you look at his numbers. I mean, he may have had two. Who cares about Pro Bowls? In my opinion, they don't matter anyway. Look at his stats. You look at fumbles, touchdowns, picks, pass breakups, all those good stuff, all those good stats. He's got them all. He compares to any corner that you're thinking about putting in the Hall of Fame or that's in the Hall of Fame. He's got them all.
Yeah, and you're talking about Pro Bowls, All Pros, things like that. I mean, you got Ken Riley that went in last year. So obviously honors really isn't that big of a deal when it comes to Hall of Fame selection. So
it shouldn't be. I agree with you. You know, everyone wants to talk about stats, stats, stats. Then look at his stats, please. If you want to talk about stats, look at Charles Tillman's stats and tell me he's not Hall of Fame worthy, because he is. The peanut punch, he you know, that everyone talks about that. Now you see guys punching the ball out because of him. He started that, and guys are still doing it now. But his numbers, like cost fumble wise and pick up, they're stupid. A corner should not have that many cost fumbles and recovered fumbles. It's amazing what he did.
Well, hopefully he's going to get in one of these days.
I just hope he gets a little bit of recognition, obviously, because he gets. They don't even talk about him going in there, and they should.
Yeah, I mean, you hear his name come up every so often, but it seems like it's not serious enough. And I'm not sure if, you know, you get someone like a Devin Hester in there that maybe they're canceling each other out a little bit. They're saying, you know, how many Bears are we going to put in there?
As many as they should. As many that deserve to be in there, in my opinion, because there's like those two guys should be right up there with everybody else. You know, it gets harder and harder every year to get in because there's so many great players that retire every year. It's tough. You know, and I know there's a pecking order. The media, the guys who vote have to do a certain thing to get the guys in they want in. But those two deserve to be in there.
I agree with that. So
I'm glad you do.
Let's see here. I know that you had mentioned this earlier. Your son Kennedy is going to be going to Notre Dame. I got it. Yep. Imagine you're pretty proud to have him go to a big time program like that.
Yeah, my kids are unbelievable. So I'm very fortunate. I got my oldest daughter. She's a law student at Marquette in Milwaukee. My middle daughter lives in Lawrence, Kansas. She's a DJ. She's 19. She does some DJing on the weekends. Pretty awesome. She loves music. And then my son Kennedy just got to Notre Dame in January. So I'm very excited to get a chance to watch him play. If he gets on the field, who knows? You know, it's a pretty competitive place to play football. But beyond football, what a great academic school. You know, he's going to get a great degree in 4 years when he leaves there. But he had some good options to choose from, but he chose there because of their head coach. You know, Marcus pulls a lot of weight, and he really liked what Marcus had to say. He liked what he stood for. It was an easy decision for him in the end to choose to go to school there.
All right. Just want to repeat things. Once again, how can people learn more about Gridiron Greats and donate to the organization?
GridironGreats.com would be the best way to do it, in my opinion. Go there, check it out, look at their website. There's ways to donate. There's ways for if you need information or if there's guys that need help, go on there and see what you can do. Email, text, call. They'll help you out. Like I said, it's not hard for them to reach out to you and help you. So go on there and do some research.
Brian, thank you for being here. I really appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks for having me on, Ken. I appreciate it.
No problem. As all of you know, we at the Football Learning Academy are dedicated to helping retired players in need, which is why we wanted to have Brian Urlacher on the show to talk about Gridiron Greats Assistance Fund. To give you more background on the organization, it is a nonprofit organization providing financial grants and pro bono medical assistance to retired players in need. According to their website, the organization focuses on the humanitarian side of post-football related issues, namely social services to retired players who are in need due to a variety of reasons, such as inadequate disability and pensions. The organization was founded in 2007 by Green Bay Packers Hall of Famer Jerry Kramer. In 2008, Hall of Famer Mike Ditka took over as chairman of the board and helped expand the programs and services offered to what they are today. I highly recommend that you check out their website at gridirongreats.org. Now on to the Pro Football History Nugget of the Week, where we talk about the great lineage of linebackers in Chicago Bears history. We're going to handle this in chronological order based on when they started their career with the Bears. Clyde Bulldog Turner played for the Chicago Bears from 1940 through 1952. He made an immediate impact playing both center and linebacker, gaining first and second team All-Pro nominations his rookie year. He also won a championship in the famous 73-0 drubbing of Washington by the Bears in the 1940 NFL Championship game. That was the first of four championships that the Bears won during his tenure. A member of the All-Decade team in the 1940s, Turner was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1966 and is also a member of the College Football Hall of Fame. Pro Football Hall of Famer George Conner played for the Bears from 1948 through 1955. Over that time, he earned four trips to the Pro Bowl. He started his career playing offensive tackle and defensive tackle. However, in 1949, he was moved to linebacker, positioned on the outside of the defensive end. He stayed at linebacker the rest of his career. After retirement, he was named to the All-Decade Team of the 1940s, was inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame, and was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1975. Bill George played for the Bears from 1952 through 1965. He finished his career with a single season with the Los Angeles Rams in 1966. An eight-time Pro Bowler, Bill George started as the middle guard in the five-man defensive front. Then he started to pull back to cover the natural flaw in the five-man front where the offense could just pass over the top of the line to the gap in the middle of the field behind the middle of the line. With George dropping back, he was able to disrupt the passing game in the middle of the field. This was the precursor to the 4-3 defense. His quickness and agility gave him 18 interceptions. He was still able to penetrate the line and generated an unofficial total of 28.5 sacks. Keep in mind that the unofficial sack totals only go back to 1960. Nothing prior to 1960 has been tabulated. Bill George was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1974. Joe Fortunato played for the Bears from 1955 through 1966. Along with Larry Morris and Bill George, Fortunato was part of an excellent linebacking corps, some consider one of the best linebacking corps of all time. Earning five trips to the Pro Bowl, Fortunato was named to the All-Decade Team of the 1950s and was nominated as one of the 100 greatest Chicago Bears of all time. Dick Butkus. What's there to say that hasn't already been said about one of the greatest middle linebackers of all time? I may be a little biased because he went to my alma mater, the University of Illinois, but it's hard to argue his place in pro football history. He played for the Bears from 1965 through 1973. Over that time, he was named Defensive Player of the Year twice, went to eight Pro Bowls, and was named to the All-Decade Team of the 1960s, the All-Decade Team of the 1970s, the NFL's 75th Anniversary Team, the NFL's 100th Anniversary Team, had his jersey number retired and was inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame and was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. That's just some of his accolades. Truly one of the greatest of all time. Doug Buffone played for the Bears from 1966 through 1969. He retired as one of the all-time leaders in games played for the franchise at 186. He had over 100 tackles in seven seasons with over 1,200 for his career. He had one season with 158 tackles. That's not enough. He finished his career with 24 interceptions, a franchise record for linebackers. After his retirement, he was a founder of the Arena Football League. Otis Wilson played for the Chicago Bears from 1980 through 1988. Otis Wilson was part of another great linebacking trio when he played with Mike Singletary and Wilbur Marshall, both of whom we'll talk about in a little bit. Wilson was the main blitzer in Buddy Ryan's 46 defense and had 10.5 sacks in 1985. Overall, he had 36 sacks and 10 interceptions in his career. Mike Singletary is another legendary middle linebacker. He played for the Bears from 1981 through 1982. Over that time, he earned Defensive Player of the Year honors twice, NFL Man of the Year, 10 trips to the Pro Bowl, and is a member of the All-Decade Team of the 1980s. Oh, and he's also a College Football Hall of Famer and a Pro Football Hall of Famer. After he finished his playing career, he went into coaching. Wilbur Marshall was named one of the 100 greatest Bears of all time. He played for the team from 1984 through 1987. Even though he had a relatively short career with the Bears, we're looking at his career in totality with this list. After the Bears, he had stops in Washington, with the Houston Oilers, Arizona Cardinals, and the New York Jets. Overall, he played in 179 games, had 49 sacks, and 23 interceptions. He was a two-time Super Bowl champion and is a member of the College Football Hall of Fame. A member of the Pro Football Hall of Fame and College Football Hall of Fame, Brian Urlacher is synonymous with the great Chicago Bears middle linebackers. He played for the Bears from 2000 through 2012. Over that time, he earned eight Pro Bowl trips, Defensive Rookie of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, and is a member of the All-Decade Team of the 2000s and was named to the list of the 100 Greatest Bears of All Time. Seven-time Pro Bowler Lance Briggs played for the Bears from 2003 through 2014. Over that time, he earned seven trips to the Pro Bowl and was named as one of the 100 Greatest Bears of All Time. Teaming up with Brian Urlacher, they made a formidable duo. Khalil Mack started his career with the Oakland Raiders. After four seasons, he was traded to the Chicago Bears along with a second-round pick, which was used to draft Cole Kmet. They also received a conditional fifth-round draft pick, which turned into a seventh-round draft pick. In return, the Raiders got a first-round draft pick, which they used on Josh Jacobs, a first-round draft pick in the following draft, which was used on Damon Arnett, and a sixth-round pick and a third-round pick the following year. In 2021, Mac was traded to the Los Angeles Chargers and remains with the team at the time of this recording. Currently, he has earned 8 trips to the Pro Bowl, was named as one of the 100 greatest Chicago Bears of all time, and is a member of the All-Decade team of the 2010s. That's one hell of a list. There are 6 Pro Football Hall of Famers and 6 College Football Hall of Famers. And let's face it, Joe Fortunato should also be considered for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Not bad for a single franchise. Thank you for listening to the official Football Learning Academy podcast. To learn more about the Football Learning Academy, go to our website at www.football-learning-academy.com. Not only will you find links to our social media channels and a listing of all podcast episodes, but you'll find other fascinating interviews and classes. And an important note, a portion of all proceeds generated at the Football Learning Academy go to help retired players in need. That website again is www.football-learning-academy.com. If you like what you've heard with this or any of our episodes, give us a 5-star rating and review on the podcast platform. It helps us grow our podcast so that we can continue to bring you quality content. If you're interested in becoming a sponsor for our show, email us at admin@football-learning-academy.com to talk about the various options available to you. We'd love to talk to you about adding you to our team. Thank you for listening.
Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, aka the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
This is Mark Mortier, and if you're a sports history fan like me, tune in and hear me talk about some great sports moments of the past. Growing up during the 1970s, I got to watch some of the most iconic moments in sports history. Hank Aaron breaking Babe Ruth's home run record. Willis Reed limping out of the locker room in Game 7 of the NBA Finals at Madison Square Garden as the fans erupted with a thunderous ovation. The 1980 Miracle on Ice, as Team USA defeated the powerful Soviet Union in the Olympics. Listen every Tuesday on Yesterday Sports.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.